as the 2020 election was rigged, have popped up in New Mexico, where ostensibly, in the name of ferreting out voting fraud, they have sparked concerns about intimidating voters in areas with large minority populations. Top Democrats on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform in March announced an investigation into charges from state officials that EcoMail was retained by tiny Otero County to examine potential voting fraud, in part by overseeing a door-to-door voter canvass. The founder of EcoMail, V.A. Shiva Ayadurai, has been a frequent promoter of unfounded conspiracies about the 2020 presidential election results, as well as a Senate primary in Massachusetts that he lost. And the firm was also a subcontractor for a widely debunked Arizona audit of its largest county. According to records obtained and published by the watchdog group American Oversight, and first reported by NBC News, EcoMail's contract called for it to supervise a door-to-door voter canvass by a group called the New Mexico Audit Force to check the accuracy of voter rolls. The company's contract also said it would inspect ballot images in the county and assess voter signatures for accuracy. The House Oversight Committee Chair, Carolyn Maloney, and the chair of its Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, Jamie Raskin, wrote Ayadurai in March that it is investigating whether your company's audit and canvass in New Mexico interferes with Americans' right to vote by spreading disinformation about elections and by intimidating voters. The House letter pointed out that 40% of the county's residents are non-white Hispanic and raised the concern that the company's canvass could have a particular impact on minority communities in Otero County. Otero County, which has a population of 67,000 people, was won by Donald Trump by more than 25% of the vote in the 2020 presidential election. In response, V.A. Shiva Ayadurai denied EcoMail was playing any such role in Otero County and did not provide requested documents, promoting another letter to Ayadurai with evidence and statements from a New Mexico couple involved in the audit force. A committee spokesperson told The Guardian that Dr. Ayadurai has denied EcoMail's participation in the sham audit and canvass, directly contradicting statements made by leaders of the New Mexico audit force and raising serious doubts about his credibility. The spokesperson added the panel is now weighing its next moves to get to the bottom of this so-called audit and prevent other attacks on our elections. The Oversight Committee also wrote in March to Justice Department Assistant Attorney General Kirsten Clark of the Civil Rights Division to share his concerns about possible negative impacts of EcoMail's Otero County efforts. On a related voting front, Congresswoman Maloney told The Guardian in a statement that another investigation she launched recently with Congresswoman Zoe Loughran, the chair of the House Administration Committee, is looking into election disinformation in Arizona, Florida, Ohio, and Texas. This is a fight for our democracy, and I'm committed to finding solutions. Daniel Lang of the Campaign Legal Center stressed that groups trying to find fraud while harassing voters or spreading disinformation won't succeed and will be challenged. Lang said, "The right to vote is the bedrock of our society, and voters won't be bullied out of exercising their rights."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Viewpoints. We have two very special guest speakers in the studio today. We have Brother Muzammil and Brother Ali. Brother Ali, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you.
And Brother Muzammil, assalamu alaikum to you and welcome to the program as well.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you on the program, Brother Muzammil and Brother Ali, as always. So we've been talking about the Islamic Revolution, which occurred in the country of Iran, also known as the Islamic Revolution in Iran. So dear listeners, considering that we were talking about the fact that the Western media has tried its best to distort the true perception of the Islamic Revolution, I think it's kind of important for us to go ahead and talk about then, what is this Islamic Revolution, right? We've heard their side of the story. Let's go ahead and now hear ours. Brother Muzammil, I'd like to go ahead and start with you on the program. Of course, we've established this fact that the Western media has tried to distort the picture of the Islamic Revolution. I mean, and so again, talking about, well, what's the importance of this Islamic Revolution? What's the need for this Islamic Revolution in the world?
You posed a very good question that what was the need Islamic Revolution? What was the need? If you look at Iran before the revolution, before the revolution even started,
yes,
we see that the people, though they might be, according to the West, though even in this regard, in the materialistic regards,
right,
the people of Iran were suffering from economic turmoil. They were suffering to match their necessities of life. But the Islamic Revolution did not come only to cater to their materialistic needs, but more so,
of course,
it came to cater to their spiritual needs, to take them back to the purpose of their creation. During that time, a lot of people used to say that, well, you know, as long as this dictator is not stopping us, he's not committing oppression on us, he's not being a typical dictator, and as long as we have freedom to do whatever we want, freedom to wear whatever we want to wear, that's not a problem. Unfortunately, a lot of scholars, even at that time, who did not really understand the religion well, they would bow down in respect of this dictator known as Shah.
Right.
So apparently everything was fine. Apparently there was no political tensions, if you might want to call it. They did not have problems with other countries. They were well respected, apparently, though, yes, it was more so that servant-master relationship between Iran and the West.
Yes.
One thing that was missing, though, was the respect of this nation around the world. They did not have self-respect. They did not have self-respect, and nobody else respected them. Though they might say, or you might look in the past and people, you would say that, okay, well, the example of respect is like other countries had relationship with them. But those relationships were purely based on the benefits that they were reaping from the resources of Islamic Republic of Iran.
Right, right.
And if a person or a nation does not have respect for itself, that nation is bound to fall. That nation is bound to be humiliated, and that nation is bound to extinct from the map of the world.
If I can just add to a point here, keep your point in mind, what you're saying very interestingly sounds like the exact same situation that is happening in Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
You know, the same humiliation, absolutely, the same lack of self-respect, and hopefully the same conclusion that you reached to. Go ahead, please.
Absolutely. I think you brought a very good analogy, a very relevant analogy. That country, again, when we look at Saudi Arabia, and I'll pick up on the point that you mentioned. When we look at this land called Hejaz, also known as, quote-unquote, self-proclaimed Saudi Arabia, they apparently enjoy relationships with all the countries all over the world, pretty much, almost,
right?
From the world powers and from even to the point that they have relationships with the Zionist entity. But do they have respect? They don't have respect at all. They do not have respect from their friends, from who they call their friends or their masters, the United States.
They call them cows that need to be milked.
They call them cow that needs to be milked. Just a few weeks ago, just in the month of October, the president of the United States, Donald Trump, made this comment four times that the Saudi Arabia would not last for 2 weeks if it's not for them, if they don't provide them security.
Right.
Is this respect? No, this is like the utter humiliation that a nation, a country with that many resources, one of the top oil-producing country, is being told by their customer, quote-unquote, or their master, that they would not last for more than 2 weeks if it was not for them.
And this is the situation that was happening in Iran
at
that time.
That was the situation that was happening with Iran. Though they had relationship, but they had absolutely no respect.
Right.
And that was needed. That was needed because in order to save a nation, if you do not have respect for the nation, you are bound to fail. You are bound to extinct. And this is the lesson that we have learned from the tragedy of Karbala, from the movement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Right.
We are the children of Hayat Min Nazillah, that we would choose death with pride over life of shame.
Excellent. I want to go ahead and bring Brother Ali into the discussion. Very beautiful place to end with that slogan from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Brother Ali, I mean, again, you know, we see that the Western media, again, is trying to distort this picture. I mean, you know, why? What is so important about the Islamic Revolution? You know, what is so revolutionary about the Islamic Revolution that it has gained the serious enmity of these imperialist and Zionist players all across the world?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So basically your question about why is it that the Zionist media and the imperialist media doing propaganda against the Islamic Republic of Iran for as long as the age of Islamic Revolution is, which is 40 years, it can be answered by looking at the need of the Islamic Revolution, which was pretty nicely explained by Brother Muzammil. Well, the need of the Islamic Revolution, and this is going to go hand in hand with why the enemies of the Islamic Revolution are conspiring against the Islamic Revolution.
Yes.
So the first point there is the need of the Islamic Revolution is Islam, because Islam calls for it. For our listeners, you know, this is an important thing that we need to understand about the Islamic Revolution is the need of Islamic government, the call for Islamic government by Islam in all times. So if we track back to the life of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he established the first Islamic government, right, in Medina.
Yes.
Now this establishment of the first Islamic government tells us very clearly that Islam calls for the establishment of an Islamic government. Now, as soon as we start talking about the Islamic government, people start zooming into Iran in today's time and age. But what I would like you, the listeners, to do is like, forget about Iran at the moment for a few minutes. Just think about the need of the Islamic government in Islam.
Right.
Why do we need a government to begin with? And why do Muslims need it to be an Islamic government?
Right.
Well, the answer to that, a very short answer, although it's an extensive discussion, is that we want to live our lives based on the principles defined by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And that's the core of the issue.
Exactly. Now, this is where this whole movement of bringing about the Islamic Revolution starts. And this is not the first time that Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, he talked about the issue. No, even our jurists throughout the history of Islam, they have been talking about the issue. Sometimes more vocally, sometimes less vocally, based on the given circumstances in their times. So Imam Khomeini was not necessarily the first one to be talking about the need of Islamic government. And it is, by the way, common between Shias and Sunnis. It's not even a sectarian thing. All the sects of Islam, all the mainstream sects of Islam or the schools of thoughts in Islam, they believe in the establishment of an Islamic government. Yes, there are differences between their understanding of how that Islamic government should look, what should be the structure of that, and what principles should it follow. But there are way too many similarities if you look at both the mainstream schools of thoughts in Islam, which is Shias and Sunnis.
If I can add to your point, Brother Ali, right here, what's really interesting is that prior to the colonialism of this West Asia region, I'm talking about Ottoman Empire all the way back to the Holy Prophet Muhammad, you will see that there were always Islamic governments.
Yes,
it was only after the event of colonialism and the imperialist agenda of breaking these countries up and breaking them into nationalities did we start to see a separation between the religion and the government. So you're 100% right that both Sunnis and Shias agree upon this concept of Islamic government. Go ahead, please.
Right. Now, this Islam...
However, I do have objection on that. I don't think they were Islamic governments, though. Islamic government... Well, of course, we had Muslim rulership, like the person who was under the guardianship of... or who the guardian was Muslim. But we did not have Islamic government. Islamic government is something which is based, the constitution is based on Islamic principles.
Yes, and this is where we said that there are differences of understanding between different schools of thoughts on what an Islamic government is, right? According to us, you know, it could be something, and according to Sunni brothers, it could be something else. But the point is that no one can actually claim that the concept of Islamic government itself does not exist in Islam. We do not believe in the separation of Islam and government.
The government, yes.
The religion and government. So this takes us to the next level, which is in 1979, this revolution that came about. The foundation was Islamic. Islam called for it, so we established it, right? So that was the first need. The second need was that, you know, we wanted to have a representative government of all Muslims. Sometimes some people try to portray it as a Shia government. Why? Right. Because they want to make it sectarian.
Right.
Yes, there are predominantly Shias in this government, but Shia is that real Islam. So this is why you see, like, Islamic Republic of Iran, since ever it came into being and, you know, it got established, from day one, from Imam Khomeini's time, we have been talking about Islamic unity. Right, so it was not like that, okay, now we Shias are in power, so we're just going to, you know, sideline the Sunnis. No, Sunnis are brothers, you know, it's their government as well, and Sunnis enjoy their rights within Iran. And also, if you look at the teachings of the Islamic Republic, especially Imam Khomeini and Imam Khamenei, they've always been insistent on Islamic unity against the enemies of Islam.
And they have equal representation in the parliament.
Yeah. Well, that's there too.
You know, so they have all the rights to given to any citizen. Yes, please.
So, you know, this is not a Shia government. This is an Islamic government. Yes, run and ruled by a head of state, which we call a Waliul Faqih, who is a Shia.
Because of the majority in the country.
Exactly. And also, you know, we believe in that because that's what give him the... that's what gives him the authority to rule over the people.
Right.
Now, the third point is why we established the Islamic government is the freedom and independence from the colonialists, from the imperialists, and from the Zionists. So all those arrogant imperialist powers who want to take control of other nations, of their resources, as mentioned by Brother Muzammil, they have to be used and consumed by those nations respectively. Okay? Now, What we in Islam believe is that the resources belong to that particular nation itself. Nobody else has the right to steal those resources, have control over these resources. Now, what in today's time and age the imperialists have been doing is they're bullying other nations. Right. They're taking control of their resources and they're using it to their benefits. And as we discussed earlier, the prime example in today's time and age is Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Right. They're completely subservient to America, UK, and the Zionist regime. Right. And that gives them the leverage of using all their natural resources as well as human resources. Last point is integrity of a nation. You know, as mentioned earlier, you know, hayat min nazillah. We learned it from Imam Hussein alayhi salam that we're not going to embrace a life of humiliation. We're going to live a life of integrity. And if that is not possible, we will let go our lives for this integrity. So
excellent.
The integrity of the Iranian nation, if you see in last 40 years, you know, it is a prime example and a role model for all the nations around the globe that, yes, you can be free of the hegemonic power's control and their hegemony and their bullying. You can be free. You can live as free human beings as Islam has asked you to do. And this is where, like, the role of Islamic
excellent.
Government is
yeah.
critical. Without that, you can never get to that desired result.
Excellent. Thank you, dear guests. We have run out of time. Thanks for listening. This was IRIB English Radio. The program was Viewpoints. And as our dear guests have said, live free, be free. And we will never submit in front of anyone other than Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We leave you in His care. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن
Food for thought.
Hello everyone and condolences to you all on the 32nd passing away anniversary of the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ruhollah Musavi al-Khomeini, may God bless his soul. And here are words of wisdom from the Holy Prophet's first infallible successor, the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. O people, man enjoys 10 characteristics that the tongue reveals. Hence, the tongue is a witness that divulges the hidden, a judge that forms an opinion, a speaker that provides answers, an interceder by which the needs are settled, a describer by which things are recognized, a commander that enjoins good, a preacher that forbids evil, a consolatory that calms the grief, a thankful by which hatred is removed, and a soother that amuses the hearings.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
A child-sized doll screams and rolls its eyes while lying on a table as engineer Hiroki Takimoto looks on calmly. But instead of being a child's toy, the doll is a humanoid robot mimicking critical medical symptoms designed to train dental workers. The robot was co-developed by Japanese robotic startups Team Sock and a local dental school. Pediaroid was designed to stimulate a child's responses when receiving dental treatment, including changes to its medical condition. Using a tablet programmed with different medical conditions, the user is able to send signals to air cylinders installed within the robot's joints to move its entire body, mouth, and tongue to display physical reactions and facial expressions.
Medical workers really need to experience medical emergencies. It's important that they experience a situation where something goes wrong, and that's what it can simulate. As for the future, we would like to further develop it in such a way that various other people who are involved with childcare, such as mothers, elementary school teachers, childcare workers, and nurses, can experience emergency simulations.
Director of Team Sock's engineering division, Yusuke Ishii, said the robot was developed due to the lack of clinical dental training to treat children. Currently, at a hefty price tag of about 25 million Japanese yen, Team Sock hopes to develop the hyper-realistic robot further such that people from other childcare industries, including pediatricians and elementary school teachers, would be able to use it for other emergency situation training.
A bridge too scary for many, but just the right place for those with a head for heights. Vietnam has opened the world's longest glass-bottom bridge to the public.
The now recorded longest glass-bottom cliffside pathway, and it's spectacular, the engineering required to build that into the side of a cliff but maintain all the features of nature, the greenery, the rock, has been an amazing project, very successful, and I think it will attract a lot of tourists.
The White Dragon Suspension Bridge fittingly opened with a dragon dance. The structure is longer than the previous record holder in China and has two sections. One stretches over 630 meters between two mountains, while the other runs around a cliffside. Visitors can look straight down at the valley 150 meters below. The structure is safe and made from three layers of 40 millimeter tempered glass.
A man in the city of Soran in Iraq's autonomous Kurdistan region has become a local celebrity for a rather peculiar feature on his face. Hussein Abdullah Ahmed is famous for a record-breaking length of his mustache. Ahmed has been going by the name Mr. Mustache for decades now. His mustache has reached the length of 2.4 meters, making him a well-known man in the city he hails from. His son says, however, that his father's unusual feature is nothing new for him.
I've always known my father likes this since I was born, although there were times when I had seen his mustache short. My dad is famous for his mustache, and we're proud of him.
Ahmed admits his mustache troubles him while working on the farm or trying to sleep, but to avoid the trouble, he either ties it from behind or stuffs it under his clothes. The 73-year-old man is not planning to get rid of his facial hair, which he hasn't trimmed since 1994. He seems to be enjoying the ride of fame as people stop him on the streets to take selfies with him.
A The contemporary ceramics exhibition kicks off at the Villa d'Atres Art Foundation near the French city of Avignon. The exhibit showcases nearly 130 artworks of all sizes. Some are so big they are put on display outdoors. The foundation has created these modern forms from roughly 100 artists from all over the world. The exhibit displays an exceptional diversity of eclectic works presenting sophisticated skills and artistry. Participating artists say working with clay and playing with glazes always produces a unique item that often generates a profoundly universal reaction. The goal of the event is to show how ceramic art has returned to the forefront of the contemporary art scene. The annual Vivid Life Festival has returned to Sydney after being cancelled 2 years in a row due to the coronavirus pandemic. The event kicked off with fireworks and lighting the sails of the Sydney Opera House. Iconic structures like the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Museum of Contemporary Art Australia are part of a series of new canvases this time around. As an added treat, the 2022 festival also has the longest continuous light walk in the history of the event. Plus, this year's highlights include a choreographed light show by 600 drones. Both residents and tourists have been anticipating the return of the show.
I saw it about 8 years ago, I think, and it's just got better and better, as far as I can tell. I mean, the Opera House is the most amazing canvas possible to project, there's this amazing digital artwork. The vibrancy of it, the colour of it, the animation of it, the explosiveness of it, the colour just bursts out in just amazing ways. That the snakes, the chameleons, the lizards crawling across it.
The Harbour City will glow with 50 light installations, the projection artworks, as well as over 100 musical events. Vivid Sydney is an annual festival that lasts for 23 nights, infusing art, innovation and technology while collaborating with boundary-pushing artists. In 2019, the festival attracted millions of attendees. The event is owned and managed by the Tourism and Major Events Agency of the Government of New South Wales.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Chilean scientists believe they have found the world's oldest living tree in a lush green forest in the south of the country. The scientists say their study shows an ancient cypress known as the Great Grandfather might have beaten the record for the world's oldest tree by 6 centuries. The bristlecone pine tree in eastern California is the current record holder with over 4,800 years of age. The scientist who led the study says the sample they extracted and other dating methods suggest that the Chilean cypress with a 4 meter thick trunk is over 5,000 years old.
We could count all the rings, but we know it's not the tree's age. It's an estimation of what we call a minimum age. So for this kind of tree, the scientific challenge is to estimate with science the part that we do not see and that is missing. And that is what we did with the millennial Alersi. This method tells us that 80% of all possible growth trajectories give us an age of this living tree greater than 5,000 years. There's only a 20% chance that the tree is younger.
Borisovic is, however, concerned about visitors harming the tree, which is located in the Costero National Park. He says visitors are still able to circle the tree's base, step on its roots, and even take pieces of its bark. The tree is a conifer native to Chile and Argentina and can grow to heights of up to 45 meters.
The world's oldest living man has just turned 113 years and says he's going to be around at least 10 more years. Good for him. Born on May the 27th, 1909 in Venezuela, Juan Vicente Perez Mora is still in pink of his health and memory and does not take medication. He has no trouble recalling his childhood marriage and the names of his siblings, children, and grandchildren. He has 41 grandchildren, by the way. So what is the secret behind a long life? Work hard, rest on holidays, go to bed early, love for God, and always carry him in your heart. The Guinness World Records declared Perez Mora the oldest living person last week. The meadows in the foothills of the Swiss Alps have turned white these days, with locals calling it May snow. But it has nothing to do with snow. It's all about narcissus blooms covering the hills above the town of Montreux. Locals call the scene May snow because it looks like a blanket of snow from a distance. The flowers have been a tourist attraction since the 19th century, but factors such as urbanization have caused their decline in the past few years. Humans have disrupted the turtle survival for years due to their greed for meat, eggs, skin, and shells. But the decreasing population of the species is creating conscience of conservation. Cambodians have released hundreds of turtles of an endangered variety into the wild on World Turtle Day. About 600 Cantor's giant soft-shell turtles were let into a river in northeastern Cambodia. After people collected the species from a holding pool, Cambodian monks blessed the tiny creatures, then set them free. The Wildlife Conservation Society was the organizer of this event. It said that only a few records of Cantor turtles have remained in Laos, while they have mostly been wiped out in Vietnam and Thailand. The body has so far released over 1,500 hatchlings into the wild in 2022. A print art exhibition chronicling nearly a century's worth of artistic achievements by a Chinese woodcarver has been unveiled in the city of Suzhou near Shanghai. The carved into wood exhibit features nearly 80 of Huang Yongyu's wood blocks and prints. Woodblock printing is a form of Chinese art dating back hundreds of years. In this form, patterns are carved out of a thick sheet of wood to create a type of multi-layered surface. Then ink is applied in various stages to print the image and its colors. The humble 98-year-old artist said during his years of practicing art, he learned that sincerity mattered more than technique. The exhibition was launched in collaboration between Suzhou Museum and the Beijing Fine Art Academy.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Today's Special. According to the solar calendar, today is the demise anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini. We invite you to listen to today's text on today's special. Today, Saturday, is the 4th of Zilqa'da, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 14th of Khordad, 1401 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 4th of June, 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We would like to express our condolences on the demise anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Imam Khomeini dedicated most of his life to resistance against the US-backed Pahlavi dynasty, which finally led to his downfall in the 1979 Islamic Revolution. In the pre-revolution era, he spent more than 15 years in exile for his stiff opposition to the last monarch, Muhammad Reza Pahlavi, mostly for his association with the Western imperialists. After his return from exile in February 1979, the late Imam Khomeini led the Iranian Revolution, which saw the end of the 2,500-year-old Persian monarchy. He became the supreme leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran in 1979. Every year, millions of Iranians take part in the ceremonies across the nation to mourn the anniversary of the demise of the late Imam Khomeini. Hundreds of foreign guests, including scholars and researchers, also attend the ceremony. We would like to express our condolences again on today's occasion, that is the demise anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini. Please stay tuned.
Your dominion is so vast, yet your beauty isn't seen. Ya Rabbi, please accept my prayer. Ya Rabb al-alamin, Ya Rahman Ya Rahim.
Political thoughts and legacy of the late Imam Khomeini. The late Imam Khomeini adamantly opposed monarchy, arguing that only rule by leading Islamic jihadis will ensure Sharia. Imam Khomeini believed that Iran should strive towards self-reliance. He viewed certain elements of Western culture as being inherently decadent and corrupting influence upon the youth. His ultimate vision was for Islamic nations to converge together into a single unified power in order to avoid alignment with either side, the West or the East, and he believed that this would happen at some point in the near future. The late Imam Khomeini expressed support for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. He states, "We would like to act according to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. We would like to be free. We would like independence." Imam Khomeini led an ascetic lifestyle, being deeply interested in mysticism and was against the accumulation of land and wealth by the clergy. Many of Imam Khomeini's political and religious ideas were considered to be progressive and reformist by leftist intellectuals and activists prior to the revolution. Today, that is the 14th of the Khordad, according to the solar Hijri calendar, is the demise anniversary of this holy man, the late Imam Khomeini.
To me, he is Ruhullah, the spirit of Allah. And that is enough, because this name encompasses and encapsulates this great personality in history entirely. Why? There is absolutely no doubt about the importance and the significance of the position of the late leader of the Islamic Revolution, Al-Imam al-Rahil, Ayatullah al-Uzma, al-Sayyid Ruhullah al-Musawi al-Khumayni, A'lallahu maqamah wa qaddasallahu nafsahu al-Zakiyya, that today in the world of Islam, he occupies a prominent position. And this influence was not restricted to the borders of Iran. When he came after 14 years of exile, received by millions of people, and when he departed from this earth, and his funeral was attended by millions of individuals, one of them was a villager who was asked, "Why have you come here?" He said, "By Allah, I have never left my village the entire lifespan. I've never left it. Yet it was this personality that captured my heart, and I am here to mourn his passing away." Look around the world today, and in that time, and you see the influence of Imam al-Khomeini everywhere. In South Africa, people used to paint his pictures on the wall, and Nelson Mandela would say that his influence had extended to a great depth. Why? Some people came and said, in him we find profound inspiration and importantly hope. The apartheid regime came forward and said, let us have an agreement. Let us exchange oil in order for us to recognize you. Imam said, we do not make deals with racism. We do not stand with this type of relationship. You look at Iraq, the great scholar, Ayatullah al-Uzma, al-Sayyid al-Shaheed, Muhammad Baqir al-Sadr, Ridwanullahi alayhi. What does he say? In his famous statements, he says, ذُوبُوا فِي الْإِمَامِ الْخُمَيْنِ. Dissolve yourself in the personality of Imam al-Khumayni, كَمَا ذَابَ هُوَ فِي الْإِسْلَامِ. Exactly how he annihilated himself for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the Infallibles, lessons from the life of the Infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Imam Khomeini's personal features and characteristics. The late Imam Khomeini had a very strong and powerful personality marked by his power to resist hardships and difficulties. He was outspoken in declaring his position. He was honest. He used to speak with sincerity. All those who listened to Imam felt honesty in his statements. These were Imam's personal attractions. Faith and reliance on Allah the Exalted were visible in his behavior and his statements on an equal basis. Both his behavior and his statements were signs of faith and reliance on God the Almighty. These were Imam's attractions. Some of his attractions were related to the principles that he presented. For example, one of the things that he presented to the people was Islam, original and Muhammadi Islam. Original Islam is a kind of Islam which is neither fettered by a reactionary outlook nor by syncretism. During a time when these two things existed together, reactionary outlook and syncretism, Imam Rahmatullah advocated the original Islam. This was attractive to the Muslim youth. One of the principles that existed in Imam's slogans was independence. Other principles included freedom and social and economic justice. These were the principles that the late Imam Khomeini brought up. These are all attractive.
When his son,
Sayyid Mustafa rahmatullahi alayh was assassinated. When he heard the news, people expected him to close and not to teach in the Hawza for a number of days. He said, no. وَهَبَنَا اللَّهُ نِعْمَةً وَقَدْ اسْتَرْجَعَهَا الْآنَ. Allah gave us a favor, a blessing in the shape of Sayyid Mustafa, and now he's taking him away. He's taking him back. It didn't affect him, yet something else affected him. One day one of his students, I think it was Shaheed Mutahhari, said that he didn't come unusually to his class in the Hawza. Imam al-Khumayni doesn't miss his classes, yet he didn't turn up for 3 days. They went and they saw him sweating. He was feverish. He was ill. They said to him, Sayyiduna, what has happened? Are you ill? He turned towards them and said, I was sitting with a group of people and one individual had the audacity to speak ill of another individual who happens to be a scholar. I cannot fathom to be in a gathering where backbiting take place. The effect of backbiting was so profound that it affected his physical health. This was Imam al-Khumayni. And if you look at many other examples in history, this idea manifests itself. When he was sitting on the plane coming back from France in order to declare to the world this great revolution, the New York Times reporter was sitting next to him. Some of you may have seen this clip. He asked the Imam, he said, Sayyid al-Khumayni, what is your feeling now? Can you describe your emotions? How are you going through now? What would you say? The Imam didn't even raise his eyes. He has his eyes down. And he said one word that shall remain forever. The sign of his complete tabattul to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Do you know what he said? Do you know what his emotion was? He said, hich. Nothing. Allahu Akbar. Imam al-Khumayni, the greatest revolution, one of the greatest in the history of the world, and he's asked to explain and to display his emotion, what he thinks, and he said nothing. Why? Why did he say nothing? Today in the West, they may say, he may not have any emotions. He's not displaying what any other human beings would do wrong. Imam al-Khumayni saw power as a means, not the goal. Because for him, the pleasure of Allah, liqa'ullah, was the most important. That for him was the ultimate joy. Everything else was the path towards that. Therefore he said nothing. What I feel now is not any different to any other times.
Today, the 14th of Khordad is the demise anniversary of this great man, the late Imam Khomeini. We would like to express our condolences on this sad occasion to you all dear listeners and Muslims all across the world. Thank you very much for staying with us in the program. Today's special on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page.
Told me that I'm crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com,
IRIB.org/EN. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.